All right, I want to welcome everyone to the Building Fires podcast. I'm Corey McCain, your co-host, CEO of WeStrive.
I'm Farhad Jamayan, the CEO of Canna.
Boom. So every week we interview some of the coolest entrepreneurs on the planet. They've had billion-dollar exits, absolutely killing it, and we figure out how they did it, why they did it, and we try and get tips for everyone on how to really grow a company.
Absolutely. Totally unscripted, casual conversations where we get to, you know, that real deep dive view of exactly what went down, but a lot of fun, really great. Tune in.
Building Fires.
All right, so we got Mobius Air this week. This is one of the coolest episodes we've done for sure.
Absolutely unreal. I mean, you know, Carl, I ran into him in Mass Challenge a couple years ago, and even then when he was building with Moose Motion was insane, but to have it like be the flagship Formula One air racing electronic powered company in the United States, like, what?
Yeah, 100%. It was really cool, and to be honest, I'm really tired, guys, so when you're listening to this, you're going to be like, that was a really stupid question. At some point in the podcast, just know that I've had a really long day and I'm tired. But him in general, like, he's 20 times smarter than I am. So that means he's like 30 times smarter than Farhaj. Really cool guy. Awesome to listen
to.
Don't
know and you guys the questions were... that you asked, man. Don't know. Hard to tell.
Yeah, enjoy the episode, guys. This is really cool. This is going to be the future of air sports and potentially the future of like travel. So here you go. Mobius Air.
Electric motors to save the world.
Mobius Air. Air. Awesome. Well, there we go. So we're off to the races. So I start us off. Farhaj finishes the conversation. So basically, if you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, a little bit about your company, we can kind of get the ball rolling from there.
So yeah, I'm Carl Copeland. I'm founder and president of Mobius Aero. And we are America's team in the race for the future of electric aviation.
Woo!
Yeah, Mobius is an all-electric Formula One air racing team. And I will say, if you have never heard of Formula One air racing, don't feel bad, because I'd never heard of Formula One air racing before this opportunity was presented to me. So I'll give you an idea of what Formula One air racing is. Think about grown men in flying go-karts that are going over 200 miles an hour on a 3-mile circuit, 8 planes at a time, wingtip to wingtip, below 10 meters. So it's like NASCAR in the air. Very fast, very exciting stuff.
No, that's crazy. You know, to be honest, maybe Farhaj didn't give me the best overview of what you guys do, because that's really cool. I did not know that.
Literally, I Googled today and I'm like, oh my God, this is insane.
Yeah, so that's very cool. I'm excited to dive into that. Let's start off with a little bit of a backstory. Like, can you tell us, well, actually, let's start with how do you and Farhaj know each other?
So yeah, so in 2019, both of us participated in a startup accelerator called Mass Challenge. And this one was Mass Challenge Texas, which is based out of Austin.
Yep,
and so he and I were both part of the 2019 cohort. And I think we were both top finalists in that cohort.
I unfortunately was not, but you were, and I stand. But it was amazing. You know, it was my second time doing Mass Challenge. It's a NOAA Quiddy Accelerator. It's like an accelerated MBA where they teach you everything about starting a startup to scaling one. So it was an amazing experience. And that's where I met you. That's where I met Charlie, Tyler. You know, that's also where I met Sam. So I think it's an amazing organization. And, you know, you can win upwards of $500,000, like, from that pool of prizes. No strings attached at the end of the day if you had, like, amazing growth during the program. So pretty cool stuff if you haven't heard about it before.
Yeah, and you're exposed to all kinds of industry experts, from leaders in finance and investment to other forms of business management. Like Farhaj said, I mean, you can get a mini MBA in a crash course. And on top of that, they have an entire mentor program where you can get, you're able to try to get industry experts as your mentors. And I gleaned a tremendous amount from my mentors. And the biggest thing is who you meet. I mean, really, it's you know, meeting Farhaj and Charlie and others. I mean, it's just getting to meet some of the coolest people. When you're an entrepreneur, you're a huge risk taker. I mean, you're willing to put all the chips on Black, you know, and go for it. And being in the community of people who understand what you're doing and why you're doing it, and to jump in there with you. I mean, it's encouraging and you learn a lot. You pick up a lot of tricks. It was a great experience.
Yeah. And Carl, you know, I'm assuming that, you know, a lot of the tangential lines that were drawn towards Mobius Air had something to do with the amazing work that you were doing in Muse Motion. And, you know, prior to that, I guess, like, you know, what got you kickstarted into entrepreneurship, and like, what is, you know, where does that story start? You know, I'm really curious. We've never talked about that before.
Yeah. So, and you brought up Muse Motion. I hadn't brought it up yet, but Muse Motion is the company that I founded. And that was the company I was participating in Mass Challenge with. I still run that company. But I go back to being an entrepreneur to a very early age. I had a much different path than most people take. I wound up being the primary income for a family of six at 11.
Wow.
As you can imagine, the earning potential of 11-year-olds, not great. But we were in farming communities and ranching communities, and we just, you know, were farmed out to any and every job we could possibly take. And, you know, things were difficult. Things were lean. Things were hard. And at a certain point, at 19, I evicted my parents and with the goal of giving my two younger brothers a fighting chance, you know, tried to finish raising them, and then, you know, kind of went off and did my own thing. So, you know, I didn't have a lot to lose, so taking risks wasn't that hard.
I get that.
I was kind of already in a risky situation. Because of that situation, you know, I'd worked really hard academically as well as athletically to try to, you know, pull together scholarships to go to college. And unfortunately, I had a very difficult choice to make in my senior year. My parents had decided to move the whole family across the state line, and I had the choice of going and helping to feed my siblings or not, and I chose my siblings. So I moved across the state line, lost my scholarships, and you know, it was a difficult blow, but it was, you know, I'd make it again in a heartbeat. It was the, you know, it was the right call. And so that just put me in a situation where if I was going to make things happen and make things work, I kind of had to figure it out on my own. I will say I have a daughter. She's 19. She's a junior at Texas A&M. I'm really proud of her pulling.
Gig'em.
Yeah, exactly. She's pulling really, she's doing really well. She entered her junior year with a 4.0, you know, just
wow. Doing well. Congratulations. Yeah, that's amazing.
And so, you know, I'm really proud of that and that accomplishment. And I told her when she was young, I did it the hard way. You're not doing it the hard way. So it's, you know, it's, you know, I've had people, that's an amazing story. And I'll be honest, it didn't feel that amazing while it was going on. It's always good in hindsight. But that really built in me the understanding that if something was going to happen, I was going to have to do it. And the thing I didn't do was I didn't blame anyone else for it. What I went through, what I lived through, what I had to deal with was nobody's fault. You know, it just happened to be where I landed. And not only I had hard times, but I also was incredibly blessed to be born in the great state of Texas in the US of A. And so lots of opportunities, and I got to work side by side with some of the smartest, hardest working men I'd ever known. And you know, that's who I wound up working for as a preteen and teen. And I got to learn a lot from them about dedication, commitment, hard work, you know, early to rise, you know, working late, doing what needs to be done. And so I was able to apply that to my desired career path. And so
that's what did you go to university, or did you just like naturally start to pick up getting into technology and like tinkering with objects is what got you started?
Yes, I've always been incredibly fascinated with electricity and electromagnetism. It was this, even as a small child, I mean, it was this invisible force that I couldn't see, couldn't feel, but it could knock you off your feet, and it made the whole world go around. And I just couldn't understand it. And I'm the kind of guy that I don't want to know the how. I need to know the why and the deep how, like, I need to know what's going on that my eyes can't see that makes these things happen. And so, yeah, I just was fascinated by it. So I consumed everything I could consume. So I did not go to university. I was the first male in my family line to graduate high school.
Wow.
My younger brother was the first one of us to go to college. And my youngest brother was the first one to graduate college. And, you know, my other brother and I, we helped support him while he did that. But I was incredibly blessed to have been born into the age of the internet. I wound up with the Library of Congress at my fingertips, and MIT's OpenCourseWare came onto the scene in my early 20s, and man, it changed my world. And so I was able to go out and learn. And I'll be honest, though, that some of the best information I got was from a junior high science book, because it put it in simple English, you know. I just self-educated and I consumed every bit of information I could consume. Watched every PBS show and every Nova Science Now and everything, you know, I just consumed it all. And over time, over years of interest, curiosity, and research, I began to piece together the knowledge that helps me do what I'm doing now.
I want to say, like, it's just funny, like, how much smarter you are than me. Like, I don't think I've ever used the word electromagnetism in my entire life. So like the moment you said that, I was like, I was already like 99% sure you were smarter than me. And then you said that word and I was like, yeah, he's smarter than me. That's all incredible. Go ahead.
Never conflate the ability to regurgitate information with intellect. I'm just saying.
See, I've never said conflate either. So I know that's a good quote. I know it's a really great quote that you just whipped out, Carl, but I'm going to go with you're smarter than me. So I think that's cool that you guys were able to meet in Mass Challenge. I think Texas has such an awesome startup community and just overall environment versus like where I came from. And I'm just really jealous that you guys were able to have those things growing up. Obviously, Carl, your upbringing is a whole nother story. Like that's so incredible what you were able to do. And I definitely did not have that kind of responsibility growing up. So that's obviously shaped you into who you are. But with the whole Texas thing, I actually just decided this week or this past week that I'm moving to Austin. So I'm excited to like really explore how, you know, like the Texas environment supports entrepreneurs and like all the different incredible programs and, you know, just people that are out here. So I can definitely speak on everything that I've heard about that too. So, but back to you as a founder, I'm curious how the whole Mobius Air thing started. So you kind of mentioned that it kind of, I don't know how you put it, but like it kind of fell onto you, like someone brought it up to you, like you didn't really know what the racing was like. Can you kind of touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, it actually happened while participating in Mass Challenge. I've been working on a new system of electromagnetics, basically a new way of making something move like an electric motor. The end result is an electric motor, but it works differently. And so I've been developing that technology for a long time, getting ready to bring it to market. I got to the point where it was time to launch a company. And so I launched Muse Motion to bring this technology to market and join Mass Challenge, obviously to gain all the insights. And I'm not, my brain's not wired for an MBA and I needed the help. So I jumped into Mass Challenge and while participating there, I was in Austin at one of the Mass Challenge events and bumped into someone who was out trying to promote this new all-electric racing league, air racing league. And, obviously I struck up a conversation that, hey, I design and build electric motors, really ultralight, high-performance electric motors. And he was like, oh, well, here's our racing team. You should consider, entering a team. And I sat there for a minute and thought, that's the most stupid thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
No,
I know nothing about aviation or airplanes. I, like every red-blooded Texas boy, I dreamed of flying, but it was a dream. I had other things to pursue, and other things that took up my time. But the idea of I'm in the middle of a startup, I'm already not sleeping, and I'm going to tell all of my investors and family and friends who supported me along the way, hey, guess what? I'm going to go do this, entertainment venue, right? I'm going to go set up a racing team and distract myself from bringing to market all the products you supported me to develop. And that just sounded really like not a good sell,
Yeah.
And so I set on it. I just kind of walked away thinking, that's a childish fantasy. It's a dumb idea. you know, maybe down the road one day. And then about 3 days later, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. It's the most genius idea I've ever heard. I now have an most extreme spectator sport on the planet to demonstrate my technology. I mean, if I'm wanting to if I'm wanting to promote the future of electric mobility and electric motion, electric whatever, what better sport than high speed, ultra low, really fast aviation? And because it's a sporting venue, it's an experimental league, so I can do stuff in that league that you would never be able to put to a commercial application without, you know, a decade or more of regulatory hurdles to get through, right? So that's really what that it was, that moment, kind of that understanding that I could use this to move the technology forward, but moreover, just to move humanity forward. Develop the technologies that will power the future of mobility and aviation and robotics and everything else, and use this high profile platform to demonstrate in a very tangible real world application the systems I've been developing.
That's really cool. I mean, that's a really creative, like not obvious marketing technique. Like that's a really creative way to look at that. I don't know anything about what you're talking about. I really am so like out of the science world, but that all blows my mind. So like, can you talk a little bit about the actual league itself and like, I mean, maybe like how a race goes and how long it's been around and all that?
Yeah. So this is a brand new league. There's not been a first race yet.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
We were actually targeting this month for the first race when we launched the league, but COVID changed all of that, right? But also, I don't think that everyone who got involved early on, one of the things that motivated me to join actually was realizing that no one doing this really understood the massive engineering challenges, technical challenges they were taking on. I mean, there's a reason why you don't see electric airplanes zooming around in races right now. It's very difficult. The technology is just now... I mean, most of the reason why mine's going to work is I've got technology no one's seen. So it's really a huge undertaking just to get an electric plane in the air. Most of the electric planes out there are low speed kind of gliders. We're talking about super fast race planes. It's a totally different.
Yeah, is it like 200 miles an hour?
200 plus miles an hour.
Wow.
Below 10 meters.
Yeah, hard pass.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are literally flying wingtip to wingtip at breakneck speeds. So,
is this where is this going to like be based in? Like, or I guess they're going to be leaving cities pretty quickly with that speed. But like, what's like, is it in like Florida or something? Like, where are they hosting these at?
Oh no, this is a global league. So the normal traditional Formula One, I mean, they're racing, you know, all over North America, South America. I know Dubai and Saudi Arabia.
Of course, Dubai.
Yeah. I mean, anywhere that's hot.
Yeah.
Africa, Asia, Europe is really big in China, really big in the Middle East, really big in Europe. And the reason why they want really hot locations, because the air's thinner, you can go faster. So I'm going to have to adapt to deserts. I'm not looking forward to that, but yeah, it's a global thing. We'll be racing in a different country every race, and, really exciting stuff. I mean, I'll get to see the world in a way I haven't yet. So,
yeah, that's beautiful. And so what, is your, the engine that you've created, is that going to be used for one specific plane, and then it'll hopefully be used across the industry? Like what's your strategy with that?
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole point of the race team, is to develop and produce and use this motor in this high visibility venue, right? So this the motor that I'm developing, what I've been able to do is I call it fragmented magnetics. So I was able to break up all of the things that make a motor turn, break it up into a bunch of smaller components. And by doing that, I got rid of over 80% of the steel that's normally found in a motor. I mean, electric motors are just giant chunks of steel with copper and ceramic magnets in it, if you've got a permanent magnet. So they're just giant bricks of steel, right? They're super heavy. That's why you don't see robots running around like you see in sci-fi movies, is because the motors to make it happen are so heavy, they can't pick themselves up on the end of an arm. Matter of fact, the Boston Dynamics robots that everyone's really familiar with, the Atlas model that does the backflips, Spot, the little dancing dog, those motors are actually hydraulic. That's the only thing strong enough to make them work, and they use little electric actuators to control the hydraulics. So electric motors are just, they're strong and they're efficient, but they're big and heavy for that strength. And so putting it in something that goes off the ground is really tough. What makes our motor unique is because I got rid of 80 to 85% of the steel. I'll have a motor that is 1/10 the size and weight for the same power output. Yeah, it's mostly non-magnetic. You break the magnetics up into individual circuits, isolated circuits, and then you support it with other material. You call it a fixture. You just mount it in this other material that does not conduct electricity or stick to magnets, right? So I have on my bench right now the world's first paper servo motor.
What? Yeah. I think I saw this. When you did the Fort Worth showcase, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, you were demoing your servo, right?
Yes, yeah, that's the paper servo I'm talking about.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, so it's 85% medium density cellulose fiber, which is glorified paper. We also commonly know it as cabinet grade MDF.
Very common, yes.
Yeah, matter of fact, I pulled all of the MDF in that motor. I pulled out of my buddy's trash bin. The friend of mine who machined those parts for me, CNC'd those parts, we pulled scraps out of his trash bin and made my motor out of it.
Unreal.
Yeah. So I also have, right now I'm assembling the first 3D printed a motor. And so 80% of the motor is 3D printed and only 20% of the motor is the magnetics. It's ultra light, ultra fast. So when you think of motors, you can think of, depending on how you design the motor, you can think of it like the animal kingdom. You can have on one end, you can have a type of motor called a servo motor, which is like a hummingbird. It's very, very precise, very fast, high performance, but no load capacity. I mean, a hummingbird can't pick up much, right? Where on the other end, you have these really, really strong motors that are like bull elephants. Those are called traction motors. What my motor has allowed me to do is I can create a hummingbird that's faster and quicker than everyone else's hummingbird, but it can pull a plow like a plow horse. It's not quite the bull elephant, but it's close. And so obviously that's a huge boon for robotics, aviation, aerospace, anything where the weight is the critical factor. And eventually it'll replace all forms of motor, mobile motors, but especially in robotics and aviation and such.
So you see your product eventually being like a replacement for the car motor?
Absolutely, it will. Yeah,
that's crazy. Wait, so it's literally powered on air, or like there's no other like?
Oh no! No, it's powered on electricity.
Okay, gotcha. Cool. Okay, I think I missed the part. I was like, I don't know how engines work. So powered on air. he has planes, so I was like, okay, so like maybe it's they're going so fast. Like, well, bikes are basically powered by air. Like, you can do a little stationary bike, and it turns on by yourself.
But your wheels pedal the wheels on the bike.
I know, but like you're okay. Well, it's not powered by air, but you're powering it yourself through the movement. So I figured maybe there's a way that like the plane moves so fast that like the air coming through it, like power. I don't even know what I'm saying. I'm probably just going to delete this part, but whatever.
That was amazing, dude.
it was a really good comic relief for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So what, how does your engine actually work then?
So it's an electric, it works like a normal electric motor. So you inject electricity into the coils, the copper, and that creates a magnetic field. So I don't know if they still did this when you guys were going through high school, but in science, when I was in high school, you at least had one teacher who made you build an electromagnet, which is just wrapping some wire around a nail and hooking up to a battery, right?
So yeah, I did that in school for sure.
Yeah. So that's really what makes a motor work is you have wire that's wrapped around a piece of iron, like an iron nail. And when electrons move through the wire, it produces magnetic fields while it's moving. That causes the iron to line up and produce its own magnetic field that matches, that's actually the opposite of the magnetic field in the coil. That's what makes a speaker work. That's what makes an electric motor work. Like a speaker, you're hitting this coil with electricity and it makes the magnet in the middle vibrate back and forth. Electric motor, you hit it with electricity and it pulls the rotating part of the motor called the rotor. It magnetizes and it puts a magnetic force that pulls that rotor toward the stationary part of the motor called the stator, and it pulls them together. Well, when they get together, it then switches the current from positive to negative, and that puts a force that pushes the rotor away. Like if you try to put two magnets together with the poles facing each other and how they resist each other, that's how a motor works. You have one phase where you're putting in electricity and it pushes a magnet away. You have another phase where you switch the electricity and it pulls the magnet toward it. And so you use that push and pull to create rotation. And so with my motor, what I've done is I basically eliminated the bulk of the steel in a motor to make it lighter. And also the motor's mostly hollow. So I'm using really light materials and mostly hollow motor. And then all the magnetic parts that the steel with the copper wrapped around it and the magnets, they're all near the edge of the motor. And so that gives me, like any lever, you know, the longer your lever, your crowbar, the more torque you get, right? So by moving all that stuff to the edge of the motor, I get more torque out of the motor. And so those are a couple of the things that the really lightweight, moving the magnets way out to the edge, that gives me a lot of torque and allows me to build a really small light motor compared to a same class motor, I mean, a motor that does the same work.
Wow.
That is a lot. Yeah, no, Farhaj actually like built robots and stuff, which is like another whole other podcast. So I think he knows, I know he knows way more about this stuff than I do. So I'm trying to follow and I keep losing, but like, for me, I mean, it sounds pretty incredible. I mean, honestly, like if it can, I mean, especially like once you get them in the form. What is the name of the race again? Sorry, I know it's Formula One based, but what's the name of it?
So the league is named Air Race E.
Air Race E. Like Formula One E. Yeah. I was going to say, it's like, you know, even most of the robotics work that I did was nested in like quadcopters and, you know, building like autonomous quadcopters and autonomous communication between UAVs and UGVs. And one of the hardest things for us, like even with like a small quadcopter and an Arduino chipset, was like finding the right PID value for it to be able to actually, you know, very comfortably fly across the space. And with an electric motor and an entire plane that's going 200 miles an hour plus, you know, and are there going to be human beings inside these planes or like what's the situation?
Oh, yeah, they're manned. They're pilots.
Wow. Yeah. How are y'all approaching like, you know, building out like the holistic kind of flight path for these planes?
Yeah, so you know they've been doing Formula One air racing for over 50 years.
Yeah, for sure.
Combustion engines. So what we're doing is we're taking kind of there's a certain class of plane, a certain size and weight. There's several different varieties, but you know you pick your plane within that platform range, right? And then what we're doing is we're taking out the combustion engine and fuel tank and cooling and all that, and we're replacing it with our own battery power system and our ultralight motor, and we're tuning the propeller for the performances of the motor. We're tuning our batteries and controls. Wow. But other than that, it's just a normal airplane. So for instance, these little, I call them flying go-karts because that's what they remind me of. If you take the pretty little skins off of them, they're just metal frames, and they literally use the old push rods from the Sopwith Camel days.
Is there like an inherent advantage to having like an electric motor plane versus a combustion motor plane? Like, can you have like consistent torque? Like, is there something crazy that was unachievable with? Oh, yeah. Okay. We'd love to hear more about that.
So the only thing that stopped electric aviation from being everywhere is the power storage, the battery.
Battery. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, where an electric motor is always going to be a combustion engine is, so if you have a 50 horsepower electric motor and you put that up against a 550 horse Hemi engine, that electric motor is going to smoke that Hemi every day by 3 or 4 car lengths.
Wow.
because an electric motor has all of its torque, all of its rotational strength, right? All of its power, it has it at zero RPM. I mean, its torque from the moment you say go to the moment you say stop, it never stops applying that full amount of torque. Whereas a combustion engine, you have to rev the motor to a really high speed, and you'll see that with the big funny cars and stuff where they the reason for that is the motor doesn't have any of its torque or doesn't have its peak torque until it gets to a certain peak RPM. And so
I mean, that's the entire premise for like Tesla's insane mode, right? Yeah. Is the fact that they could hit a button and like you're like at full blast going down the highway immediately versus being like or being forced to accelerate.
Right. With an electric motor, you have to programmatically give it what's called a torque speed curve or an acceleration curve. So if you were to open up a motor wide and give it 100%, it would literally twist the vehicle was in like a lemon. you have to have a core. And what the insane mode is on the Tesla is they basically shorten that torque speed curve to the point where it's just safe enough to not damage your car.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And most people can't handle that amount of torque because it gets squirrely. I mean, it doesn't want to hold on to the road. You know, it's just raw power delivered to the wheels. And you better hang on.
That's really exciting.
I wanted to ask, how do you guys choose your, in horse racing, they're called jockeys. I'm assuming they're just called pilots. But like, how do you guys, I said pilots, get out of here. How do you guys call, how do you guys choose them? Is there like a draft, or do you just like, do you take people that are already pilots, like in the military and bring them over? Or like, how does that work?
No, you have to go through a very special training program. So you have to be an existing pilot with a certain number of hours to even apply. And if, let's say that you guys wanted today to go out and join the Formula One League as a pilot, you'd have to have a certain class license. You'd have to have so many hours. And then you have to go through a Formula One flight training program. And so I'm going to drop a little bomb here because we're getting ready to announce our pilot.
Wait. Can we do a drum roll? Corey, are you down?
No pun. I was about to do a no pun intended on the pilot thing. Oh, go.
What?
So our pilot is Philip Goforth. Philip Goforth, up until last month, was the president of the International Formula One Air Racing.
Wow.
Boom.
He also is a 15-year veteran of Formula One air racing, and he is the individual who runs the flight training school that all rookie Formula One pilots have to go through in order to be certified to race.
Unreal.
And so he can make sure that they're really bad, and then he can win all the races.
I tell you, that's the funny thing about the aviation community is that all of them are all in. They're all in together. Some of the greatest, most open, inviting, welcoming people you've ever dealt with. If a hangar door is open, everybody lands and starts hanging out and drinking beer together. And I love that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. The pilots are amazing, and they're daredevils, but they're fun loving, but they're also, they very much are safety conscious. I mean, that's another thing is Philip, he also inspects, he sits on the safety board for the races. So he inspects the planes. He certifies the planes. He actually is usually doing the initial test flights on the plane before they're allowed to race the plane in an F1 event. So it's a rigorous program that you have to go through. And I just happen to have the legend in the field doing it for me. He's the guy who certifies everyone else. I kind of jumped ahead of the line on that one.
That is awesome. How did you land him as your pilot?
So right now we are the only team in all of the only official team in all of the Americas. And so we are America's team in this race. And so,
so cool.
I just knew I needed a pilot. I mean, I'm an engineer. I'm not a pilot. Wish I was, but I'm not. And so I actually just went looking for doing some research and saying maybe one of the guys in the traditional combustion Formula One league would want to pilot this entry. Well, there's a lot of stigma against this electric league because most of the pilots really understand how challenging it is with known technology, let alone with unknown technology. And so I was calling around, and when I first started talking to him, he was kind of just just amusing me a little bit. But then as I talked to him about what we were doing and the technology behind it, he's like, dude, I'm in. And, but you got to convince my wife. And so
no way.
What one of my founding team members and I got in the car and we drove clear across Texas from Fort Worth to Big Spring, where he's at, and met him. And then I spent about 2 hours convincing his wife. I apologize. I cannot believe these. I thought I turned these things off.
You're good. No worries.
I turned them off. So yeah, so I got in a truck and my partner and the race team and I, we hopped in a truck and drove across Texas to Big Spring, where my pilot's based, and stepped out of the truck. And he was like, who are these guys? it was a funny moment. And then we started talking to him, and about 2 hours later, I had his wife convinced that I was going to keep him safe. The plane wasn't going to burn down in the air from lithium batteries. And that was it. He was all in. And not only is he my pilot, but he is building the plane itself. We're building a custom plane that's designed around our motor's capabilities. And
that's what I was going to ask next is, like, so now that you have the battery, like, how does the whole building the plane process work, which arguably might be more difficult, less difficult? Like, how does that all work?
You know, the good thing is he had already started building this plane before we met. And then because it's a traditional Formula One plane. He had actually a new spin on an F1 plane. And so he was working on that plane for the traditional league. And then when I came in, he's like, hey, you should buy this plane for your team. And so we did. And so we're going to be demoing a lot of new technologies. But the real thing that happened is, because we don't have to have a combustion engine in the plane, we can shave off all the, so there's these things on the front of the nose of the plane that are called cheeks. And basically, you have to make room for the heads for the pistons, right? So the pistons protrude off the motor. You've got to have space for that. And you've got to be able to let air get in there and cool it. And so those big cheeks add a lot of drag. Well, because we're dealing with an electric motor and it doesn't have pistons, we can shave that off. We're going to shave off some other stuff. And then, you know, motor battery combo we're planning to put in there will be right at the same weight of what they already had. And so, but we'll have significantly more horsepower than a combustion engine would normally have. And so, we expect to place very, very well and sell a lot of world firsts and world records while we're at it.
Fingers crossed, man. Fingers crossed. And the one thing I was curious about is, like, because, like, regular Formula One teams, a lot of the financing comes from sponsorships, you know, like car companies and petroleum manufacturers, and even Rig Up, I saw just recently, like, sponsored a NASCAR car. Like, how did y'all approach financing this project? And, you know, is there something that you're seeking down the line, you know, or an offer which our listeners could help with, you know, to bring this to life?
Yeah, we are absolutely seeking sponsors. We are everything we do from this point forward is a world's first. We are setting records. We are setting precedents. We are setting the bar. And I'll tell you something about Mobius is we're also not going to limit all of our entries into Formula One air racing. We've already been invited to step into other forms of extreme racing, from Baja and Bonneville Salt Flats and sporting class air races. And plus, we're going to be doing a lot of publicity stunts and such. And so we are absolutely out recruiting sponsors and partnerships. We've already acquired a couple of them. For instance, we just announced our first partner, which is Outcast Watch Company, which is based there in Austin and Round Rock.
Wow.
And this guy's it's a veteran-owned business. Kevin Junkins, who founded the company, he came back from service and just thought, you know, he really wanted to do something that he enjoyed, which was fine watches, and he wanted to make them affordable. Especially for his fellow service members who couldn't justify, you know, really high-end watches. And so he started the watch company, and we just released an exclusive commemorative watch, our first in a series that we're planning on doing, a commemorative watch. He just designed one for Team Mobius, we just got it up on the website recently. Having a little bit of technical trouble getting our website where we want it, but it should be up and for sale right now. But he did that as a partnership to sell these watches and help to support the team. Great partnership there. But we're also, we've got some larger sponsors that have already joined us, and we're waiting to announce those, and then out seeking additional sponsors. And we're going to be high visibility in a global stage, and looking for as many people as we can find who want to join us and really changing the future and moving humanity forward.
Well, I was going to say, I think it's really cool that you guys are entering other races, and it'd be really cool if you guys could beat a regular, motor plane at some point with your electric motor. I think that'd be huge for everything that you're doing.
Yeah, that's kind of the idea. Matter of fact, we've been invited to some traditional races that are really brutal races, and all we have to do is not finish last. I mean,
exactly.
And that's a win.
Yeah, it's a huge win. Just to have an electric vehicle beat a combustion vehicle in an extreme sport is going to be huge, and it'll prove the viability of the technology.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that's good. As far as good.
Yeah. No, I was just saying, it's like I'm really curious to see, outside, a couple of things that I'm hearing is with the technology that you've developed in Beast Motion and the future that Mobius Air has and a lot of these other verticals that you'll be getting into, what is your 25-year vision of the world? What narrative violation are you looking to fulfill? And, how does electric motors help get to that future?
Well, the first thing is the efficiency of an electric motor. They're very efficient. When you think of a combustion engine, maybe 10 to 15% of that motor goes into moving you. The rest of it's lost in heat and friction and moving the vehicle and the support structure around it. Whereas an electric motor, electric motors are really so a combustion engine is about 80% and lose 80% loss without moving anything. Just in heat waste and fuel waste. So an electric motor, depending on how you tune it, can be anywhere from 80 to 99% efficient. So it changes the dynamics of how power is used. And then we've got a new battery technology we're developing. It's really high density. And again, it will basically enable a long range transport and long range production in a vehicle environment. That's one of the big technologies, the motor and then the hybrid battery we're building. Is really, both of those are going to significantly cut the amount of energy we have to consume to produce power. And I'm going to probably throw something out that's going to irritate some people, it's the truth. This idea of charging your car at home is one of the silliest ideas, in my opinion, that I've heard. And let me explain why. When power is produced at a power plant, by the time it gets to your home, you've lost about 50 to 60% of that energy through heat and resistance and other imperfections. And then by the time it gets to your home, now you've got the losses of whatever you're connecting to it added to that. So you've got, California, which is having rolling blackouts every summer, but they want to put every vehicle in the state on the grid. How are they going to support that? How are they going to sustain that? And especially when you're losing, you're still burning coal or natural gas or oil or nuclear or whatever. You're still burning all that stuff to create the energy to deliver it to the house. And you're losing 50 to 60% of it before it even gets to the home. And whereas, if the kind of infrastructure we're planning on, we would be able to do all of the charging at the power plant level. We're in the 90 percentile of energy efficiency. And then we can have a motor that's ultra light and high efficiency, which means that instead of the motor moving itself, it's using its energy to move what you want it to move, which is everything else. And so and we can use the existing infrastructure of fuel stations for you to be able to go in. And the way we're doing this, you'd be able to you wouldn't have to swap your battery, but every couple of weeks or up to a couple of months, depending on how much you used it. And so being able to take it, that gives you the chance to, you pull into a service station, swap a battery pack, and you drive off and don't come back for a month. And that allows the batteries to go back to the plant, be recharged, and then be put back out. Think of it like a propane tank swap almost. But you're swapping a power pack. And so the marriage of those technologies, which is going to go into this race plane,
Yeah.
You will shape the future of how we drive, how we fly, how we play. And it will really drop the amount of fuel that we're consuming in order to do all these things.
Wow. Carl, I think you need to talk to one of our buddies, Garrett. He's digging tunnels underground to make sure that you get your packages delivered in 30 seconds.
The way you start that makes me sound like he's like a psycho.
I just love how, you know, not just bullish, but like very reasonable your vision of the future is and how you're paving the way to get there. And, you know, I cannot be more excited to see the first Mobius Air take flight and to look at my friends and be like, hey, like, you know, we interviewed Carl on the podcast when he announced this, and this is like it's a quantum leap for humanity in my perspective. But that's very exciting.
Yeah, and we haven't even begun to optimize the motor yet. I mean, there's so much more to go to make the motor leaner, stronger. Wow. One of the things about the motor that makes it so strong is in a normal motor, maybe a third to a half of the motor is producing torque at any given time. With our motor, 95 to 99% of that motor is producing active torque. And so you just get a much smaller, lighter motor, which means it's doing all the other stuff you want it to do. And eventually these motors will be injection molded, which will make the price of them. First, we're eliminating the very expensive steel. And then we're using, you know, modern manufacturing processes that allow you to make a motor very cheap. And so the motto of the race team is moving humanity forward. And the reason that's the mission for the team is because, you know, if we can produce super light, super cheap, super efficient power. And by the way, when you're generating power, that's still called a motor. A motor is a motor. It's a torque converter. And so whether you're putting mechanical energy in and getting electrical energy out, or the other way, electrical and mechanical out, the motor is just the converter, right? And so, so this motor has all the benefits as a generator that it has as a motor. And so being able to deliver units that are cheap, and strong and power energy dense, and you're with ubiquitous power, you get industrialization. The reason why the U.S. is so prosperous, where even the poorest people in our country have $1,000 cell phones and live better than some of the richest people in other countries. And not that we want anyone to be poor, but that's just the contrast, right? And so the reason we have that contrast is because we have ubiquitous cheap energy here in the U.S. Other countries, energy is much more expensive, and so they live in third world conditions. And so by making energy production and energy usage much cheaper, you now elevate them to an industrial level. And then once you have that cheap, ubiquitous power, you have clean, ubiquitous water, because you can desalinate and purify and drill and pump and do all those things that brings water. And then with that water, you get abundant agriculture. And now you've just met the three basic needs of mankind. And so once you take those off the table, now you have the opportunity to enlighten and educate and encourage. And that's really, we're trying to develop the pragmatic technologies to do all of that. And this air racing team is just one of the ways we can demonstrate these technological solutions. And raise the support and the sponsorship and the awareness and the funding to go out and fulfill those dreams of changing the world.
Well, Carl, this has been an absolutely amazing conversation. We couldn't be more excited for Mobius. Unfortunately, we have to wrap it up, but I think this is the best way to get out to the world. And, you know, usually at this moment is when I do the wrap up. So right now is the best time to drop your name, drop your socials, drop your handle, your website, and where everybody who's listening can find and support you. So what works best?
Yeah, absolutely. So MobiusAir.com is our website. And you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn, Mobius Aero or Mobius Air. That's where you'll find all of that on the you'll find those links on our website, and you probably can search those and find us on those social medias. We're on all the socials, even though I'm somewhat of an idiot of how to tell you how to get there.
We got you. Me and Corey are social people, so I'm following across the board.
Awesome. We're also on Parler, Rumble too. So
Boom. Carl, it was so awesome having you on here. Honestly, like, you guys are really going to change, I mean, maybe everything. I don't, you know, like, this engine's going to be so incredible. And I'm excited to watch. Like, how do we watch this, actually? We didn't mention that. Like, is it going to be on TV or, like, ESPN De Ocho? Or, like, how do we watch this?
Yeah, yeah. So the league's broadcast on all the major sporting networks. I know ESPN carries it a lot. And so not only are we broadcast on all the sporting channels, but one of the missions, one of the visions of the team is eventually we're going to be doing live streams from our own domain of these air races. And eventually there'll be 360 degree virtual reality streams where you'll feel like you're sitting in the jet as the pilot, or not the jet, the airplane, the pilot. You'll be flying in the race with us. And so we'll have
so all cool.
So badass.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I mean, just the data we're going to collect from racing at this level is going to be a huge gold mine, let alone all the other cool stuff, immersive things we're going to do.
Well, folks, you heard it here first. Mobius Air, Mobius Aero. Follow them, support them, and let's cheer for America.
Awesome.
Boom. Thank you, Carl.
That was a real pleasure.
Thanks everyone so much for tuning in to the Building Fires podcast.
Yeah, man, we're planning on dropping episodes every Monday, talking to some amazing guests and giving you the content you deserve.
Boom. Farhaj and I are so grateful for you guys. I can edit this.
I know.
Farhaj and I are so grateful for all of your support. If you can, please leave 5 stars and a review on your podcast app, whichever one you use. Farhaj and I would definitely appreciate it. I'm trying to get our little podcast SEO up.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, looking forward to seeing you next week, and we're excited to make looking forward to seeing you next week. We got some exciting guests for you.
Boom.
Guests for you.
Like guests for you.
You scare me, curs.
Boom. Arr. Boom.